Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Doug McIsaac with Online for Offline, and today I have Suzanne Falter-Barnes with GetKnownNow.com, and we're going to be talking about building your online brand. This should be a great, great call. Suzanne and I have had a lot of fun chatting in our pre-calls getting ready for this, so we'll try to keep things on track and not run down too many rabbit holes. Suzanne's background is varied. She has done a lot of things over the years, and she teaches, coaches, authors, and speakers and other entrepreneurs how to create their brand, build a branded website, blog, etc., to attract the major media. And you know, she's been a marketing consultant in New York City for nearly 20 years, working with corporations including the New York Times, Hearst, Condé Nast, and Colgate-Palmolive. She's also worked as a freelance journalist and columnist for the New York Times as well, Self, Fitness, and More, and many, many other national publications. She's also authored two best-selling self-help books on living your creative dream, and has been the main selection of the One Spirit Book Club and featured in Fitness Women's Day, Writer's Digest, and on more than 100 radio and TV shows, and now on my blog talk radio show. So, Suzanne, is there anything... 101. Yeah, more than likely, it's probably 201 or 301,
well,
isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Who keeps count?
Yes, I don't even keep count. Now, and you're sitting there, you're looking at the beautiful Lake Champlain right now, aren't you?
Yeah.
While you're talking.
Yeah. There was a dog swimming in the lake. It got out wisely because it's only 48 degrees in that lake right now.
That is chilly. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add to what I said there, Suzanne, before we jump into things?
No. I mean, some people refer to me, Doug, as a platform building expert because what my key role in helping people establish an online brand is to help them get known for it. And when you are well known, you have what people in the publishing and media call platform. You know, as in,
okay,
how much platform does that author have, or does this guest have enough platform to draw an audience? It's how well you're known and what you stand for very specifically in the marketplace. You are a fill-in-the-blank expert, in other words.
Okay, that makes sense. That is good for me to know, yeah, as well as our listeners to understand. It's great. I've had several calls with people that had really, you know, we talked about the one gentleman, Mike Michalowicz, with the Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, and how he's built a great brand, a great platform underneath him. And, you know, he is the Toilet Paper Entrepreneur.
Now, I don't know what it means, but I keep seeing it everywhere. Would you explain to me what that means?
The short version of that is well, his version, I'll tell you his version, and then I'll kind of paraphrase with mine, is, you know, we've all had that situation where we've ended up in the stall and there's only 6 sheets of paper left.
Right.
But somehow we made it work. That's what a toilet paper entrepreneur will do with his business. He's not the guy that's going to sit there and yell and scream until somebody comes in and hands him a roll or helps him out. He's going to figure out a way to make it work. And if that means that he has to work nights as a waiter to which I did with one of my businesses. I worked nights at a restaurant while I worked my business during the day. If he does that so that he can pay his bills, he does that. If he has to,
right,
you know, whatever you have to do to make it work, you do it. And that's what a toilet paper entrepreneur is. He's not that guy he's not the .com types that are out there, you know, not doing anything until they get $12 million to do it. He's actually out there making things. He's out there making things happen. And that's my version of what he has to say. But
another variation, Doug, is duct tape marketing, John Jantsch's brand, which is all about kind of being a marketer who will keep it together with duct tape until you know the bigger bucks roll in. And both of those, you know, I could do a little brand analysis of those two brands right now about what works about them. And one of the key things is that the brand itself has a lot of personality and is extremely unique. But the other key is there's a huge implied benefit. Like with duct tape marketing, it's really clear that this is about scrappy resourcefulness and about the tools to become that scrappy, resourceful, get-through-anything entrepreneur. Toilet paper entrepreneur is a little bit more obscure but really interesting. And so you want to know what it is. I had to ask you. I just couldn't resist. You know, what does that mean? So that memorability plus that unique offer that really hooks into people's craving, that's really what I want to talk about today, because that's what makes a super effective brand. You know, Doug, I'll tell you, when a lot of the people I work with are like life coaches and consultants and speakers and people like that, and they start their business by coming up with a catchy set of words. And usually, like for life coaches, it's like, right livelihood coaching or authentic living coaching. And it's this, you know, what I would call a really soft, squishy benefit that you can't really wrap your head around. So, and or worse, they call it something like, you know, Gaia Consulting or Oya Consulting or some, you know, phrase that refers to a deity from, you know, African, you know, idol worship in the 5th century. And that doesn't have anything to do with what people need from you now. In fact, I rebranded somebody whose brand was Oya Consulting. She became the EntrepreneurialMD.com. And that brand is about making a business. If you're a doctor, this woman guides you on how to leave your practice and become a successful medical entrepreneur, which I think is great. Much needed, you know.
Oh yeah, that is great. That's a good way to explain. I would say that so many of the coaches I run into have no focus.
Right.
With what they're
doing,
they'll coach everybody on everything. You know, whether they don't know if they're a life coach or a business coach. You know, I mean, I kind of chuckle because I have business coaching clients, but I'm more of a business consultant than a business coach. But I do have some coaching clients that I work with.
Yeah, well, coaches are in the business of being, sensitive empaths who can work with a person's problems and guide them in the correct direction. So why would they necessarily want to niche down? Because they're all about, you know, people in general, right? And yet if they don't niche down, nobody finds them, they can't build a practice. And, the International Coach Federation did a study last year or 2 years ago that said that only 10% of all life coaches make a living at it. And you know, that's just like heinous, because a lot of these people actually are very good at what they do and provide great value to people, but they simply don't know how to niche, nor should they. That's not their business. That's my business, you know, your business.
Mm-hmm.
It's not their business. And the internet is like, you know, 60 billion splinters, every one of them a slightly different color, all jammed into the same jar. And in choosing your splinter, you can be found. But if you choose to be sort of the jar, you can't, you know? You can't just be everything to all people. You have to pick a splinter.
You do. And you know, and if you're, you know, and maybe end up picking two or three splinters, but you have to be a very unique, defined, you know, niche around each splinter.
Right. And if they serve the same audience, all the better. You know, a lot of niches don't serve, a lot of niches are, people will serve, you know, skydivers, media moguls, and Unitarian, former Quakers who are now Unitarians. I don't think so. You know,
no.
I mean, I have three different brands, but they really do serve the same general audience and can be upsold one to the next. You know, and I think
you're serving different parts of their lives.
Yeah. Like my howmuchjoy.com site, which is where I started, is really much just about getting inspired to do something on your own and breaking through your resistance to your living your dreams. Get Know Now is about how to actually find out what that is, call it something specific, and put it up on a branded blog that really gets hits and is attractive and gets cold calls from the media. And then my other brand, I have this sort of funny little project on the side, which isn't even really a brand, but it's a parody New Age Guru. It's a performance piece. I do a one-woman show that I just toured the several cities in the U.S. and Canada with. And that was just like a real
cool,
fun summer project, which is actually something that I get my other audiences interested in just because, you know, they sort of follow what I do, but, you know, isn't really a logical fit. So you can have peripheral projects as well, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, you can. Here's on a side note. Have you ever seen Defending the Caveman?
Oh, no, I've never seen that show, but I know a lot about it.
I saw that, and I just loved it. That was a hilarious show, and it was well, it's my ex-wife now, but her and I went to it. And actually, it probably helped her marriage for a while there. Just
Yeah, people
lots of
say.
good.
People say that about that show. It's a great get inside men's heads sort of experience.
Yeah, it was interesting. Sorry, now that's a rabbit trail.
That was a rabbit
Okay.
hole, but you know what? That's what I just want to say, as a brand, Doug, that keeps you interesting because, you know, it's like Twitter or microblogging or regular blogging. We want to know that it's your birthday. We want to know that your car got dented last night and that you rooted for the Red Sox, and we also want some useful information. And if the balance is 80% useful, 20% personal, that's about right.
That's interesting. I'm learning a lot on this call. That's great.
Well, do you have a different preferred balance? Because I'd really be interested to hear what you think.
Actually, I probably tend towards 95% useful, 5% personal.
Really?
Except for except for I will say on these calls, because I've talked with folks like you, and they tend to bounce things back at me. I've probably been closer to 15 to 20% because we've talked about my background as well.
Right.
It's been interesting because even I don't. There's a lot of my background that I don't even put on my profiles.
You mean all the money laundering and that kind of stuff, right?
Well, no, but there was a
You're pretty
prison.
set with the mafia.
Well, no, I'll give you, I had one of my former employees got thrown in prison on trumped up terror prison in a
Oh,
third world
God.
country on trumped up terrorism charges. Yeah,
Wow.
cost us a $16 million contract.
Good
But
Lord.
yeah, that was kind of that's kind of actually I did an interview. Actually, here's a kind of a funny another funny aside is I did an interview with where I talked about my background, including some stuff I'd done years ago, and it was really interesting because I talked about stuff I'd forgotten about, and I forgot to record
Oh yeah, love that.
it. I was the one running I was the one running it, and I forgot to record it. I've never forgotten to record somebody else's, but I forgot to record my own. It was actually really funny, and that was an hour long call talking about stuff that I'd done 20 years ago. That I'm like, oh yeah, I did do that. That was funny. So okay, we digress again. See, people are finding
Yeah, I
out about me
know.
today.
You're a digressor.
You've kind of done it talking to me, but let's talk about how you define your personal brand. When you're working with somebody, where do you have them start?
Well, we start with defining your ideal market. And here's the thing, a lot of what I do is probing the infrastructure of what somebody wants, what they've always been interested in, what they're passionate about, what makes them interesting. And out of that, we sort of mash up what this thing is. And often I really ask people to look at what their purpose is. What is your life purpose? What do you really think you're here to do for other people? And when people know that, it gives them access to something that's really unique and more powerful because it is more unique. For instance, I always like to use the example of Kiehl's Cosmetics in New York City, which is a homemade remedy type place that started out as a little tiny drugstore in Lower Manhattan and became extremely huge and popular and super high-end, selling its products in places like Saks Fifth Avenue and Bendel's. And what it is this very high-end, beautiful, you know, sort of micro-crafted cosmetics sold in a showroom that now has two huge storefronts in this Lower Manhattan neighborhood. And one of the storefronts is all cosmetics, and the one right next to it, which is open into, it opens into through the showroom, is filled with vintage motorcycles. What is that connection? One wonders, right? So you come in to buy cosmetics, and you have to walk past all these like 1930s Harleys, you know? And the connection is that old man Kiehl, who made all the cosmetics, had this connection, and he just loved vintage bikes and collected them, and you know, they're all extremely beautiful and, you know, painted with teeny weeny little paintbrushes and super shiny chrome, and they're in incredible condition. And it sort of sets this completely unexpected but very original tone with which you can go through the showroom and really get sort of interested in what it's all about. And then you get into the cosmetics, and it's so quirky that it completely works. It's really, really memorable. So we get a sense of who the Kiehls are as people, as well as, you know, what this cosmetic brand is about, which is super high end. I mean, notice he doesn't have Kewpie dolls or, you know, Hello Kitty collection or something that's like really basic. He's got something expensive and valuable, but very male in this very female environment. And I when I ask people to develop their brands, I really try to look at what's unique and interesting about them. Trying to think of the perfect example. Well, for instance, I had one of my early clients was a woman named Tuck Self, who was a Southerner, who kind of talked like this, North Carolina. She had a really big old Southern accent. And, you know, very, very warm, charming woman. And she said, well, Suzanne, I want to be a creativity coach. And, you know, creativity coaches are kind of a dime a dozen, right? Like, everybody's a creativity coach. And the worst thing is nobody wants to buy creativity. People want the results to come from creativity, but they don't want to buy creativity. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, we knocked it around for a while, and what she came up with is a brand called the Rebel Belle. And the Rebel Belle teaches these Southern women how to be boldly self-expressive. And she figured that that was what she really wanted to do for other women, whether it's creative self-expression or saying the stuff nobody ever said in their family or speaking up in their community, whatever it is. She is the expert on bold self-expression for women who have been trained to be quiet and retiring. And that is, in fact, a rather Southern thing for these women to become kind of bold and gutsy. And it's really, really taken off. It's a really fun brand. Another one, client I worked with is Pam Slim, who has a very wonderful brand she developed with me called Escape from Cubicle Nation. That was a very kind of a general marketing site, and it became a super niche blog to people who just can't stand their little cubicle anymore and have to get out. And it's got such an emotional appeal, Escape from Cubicle Nation. You know, she realized the people she really wanted to work with were stuck in corporate America and fed up. So she tapped into a very big population with a very huge craving. I mean, you just know what it's like to work in a terrible kind of toxic corporate environment where you feel shut down, unappreciated. Everybody knows more, thinks they know more than you do, or nobody seems to understand what you're talking about alternately. And, you know, that tapping into that craving is something that she really excels at. So you see where we're going here is we're building in, we're working with people's natural cravings, and we're working with who they want to talk to. And then once you get in touch with who they want to talk to and what the natural craving is of that market, then the next piece, Doug, is to begin to look at what else is in the market that serves, in the marketplace that serves that particular niche. What are the other splinters in the jar, you know? Mm-hmm. In the case of, say, my client who has the brand The Power of Boredom, well, there was nobody. She's a boredom expert. Really interesting. She's really done like studies and really studied boredom scientifically for 25 years and learned that the state of boredom is often very close to the state of creative breakthrough. So she's an expert on boredom. Like nobody's doing boredom, right? She could own that. On the other hand, you know, all the time I get financial experts and they're trying to figure out how to separate themselves out from other financial experts. So sometimes it's about what kind of philosophy they're going to come up with or which group they're going to talk to. Are they going to consult with kids who are 2 years out of college? For instance, a very powerful brand that I participated in the development of is afterthelaunch.com. This is Shema Hyder, who has a site that has become extremely successful in 1 year. I mean, she's really built a hell of a business there. And this site is totally targeted to people who launched their businesses 2 years ago online and have flattened out. She figured that's where people are when they really need someone to come along and show them how to really build up their promo and how to do it for them. She actually goes off and promotes them like an online ad agency, basically. Only there's no advertising involved. It's all social networking and, you know, maintaining blog, podcast, etc. So after the launch is a good example of really picking a super specific market, figuring out the craving, I've been doing this for 2 years, why is everything so flat? And then looking at how everybody else markets to them and really owning this different position. You know, some people call it blue ocean strategy, where you just totally reinvent how your offer is positioned in the market.
That's interesting. You could certainly, even in an offline environment, which a lot of our listeners are in more of a traditional business environment, we can do the same thing with them, is understanding for them to look at what their ideal client is and how they could change their business to focus on that ideal client.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't even know if ultimately these kind of distinctions matter too much between offline and online, to tell you the truth,
right.
Because you're going to have to look at your competition. You've got to define your market really tightly. I mean, it just isn't enough to say it's women over 40 who are empty nesters. Used to be, it's not anymore. Now it's for online, at least. I mean, offline, okay, you got a brick-and-mortar store, you're selling, you know, teen party goods, and you're the only store in Duluth that does that. Well, good. You know, you've already got that market.
Yeah.
But if you're online, you're joining every other teen party store, not only in the United States, but in the world, you know?
Right.
You're competing with the Brit and the Indian online party stores, you know? So you'd better come up with the theme to your online party store. Oh, it's going to be, you know, vampire-based parties or whatever that is really going to make it noteworthy. And not only will it be noteworthy to your customer who's looking for something interesting, you're going to get picked up by the media. Now, this is what's really exciting about these brands I've been developing is one after another, they start getting cold calls from the media. And I mean, we're talking Wall Street Journal, Times, 60 Minutes, PBS. We're getting major, major media hits. And it's because 78% of the national media gets all of their story ideas, angles, experts, et cetera, guests from blogs. You know, I listened to an interview with a bunch of guys from Wired and the New York Times, et cetera, and they were saying they spend 2 to 3 hours a day reading blog posts. That's amazing. And then they just start calling you. I mean, I've gotten calls. I got called by Wall Street Journal not too long ago. And, you know, that was like a random thing. It's very important for people to realize that doing this early work on defining their market and their niche and really correctly branding it and making it look great and really consistent with the brand and have so it has a certain energy, that pays off again and again and again and again once it's up and running. You just can't throw up any old name and get a templated, you know, cheap blog and make it happen. You can't. It's got to be done with some consciousness and some style, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. It's like anything is you need to start with your plan, and you need to think it through before you get started. At least to a certain degree. I mean.
Yep. No, I agree. And one thing I'm really finding out is that when people have a gut sense of what they're interested in, it really works better. You know, it's not really going to work for anybody listening to this to say, okay, well, the business I want to get into is crocheting. And therefore, and the reason I say this is because I went to a conference in LA a couple of years ago, and it was something called the Big Seminar, and it was full of massive internet marketers, people who have, you know, thousands and thousands of websites. And there was this guy there who was like the leading expert in crocheting online. And he was like this big sort of cigar chomp and linebacker type. And I'm like, crocheting? He said, do you know how many hits crocheting gets on Google and Yahoo every day? And he was like, he said, I own crocheting tips, you know? And sure enough, he put together like crocheting workbooks and he was making bank on this. He was really making money on it. But, you know, it was an odd thing because you just knew that the style and the feel of this crocheting site was not going to be exactly what the market really was craving. There was no sort of feminine touch to it, you know what I'm saying? So it's odd thing. It's an odd thing. You want to get into the craving, but you want to know these people intimately. And often, like, I find out people's ideal market comes from their past. You know, somebody that they worked with, somebody that they were once. Weight loss sites, if you've lost 100 pounds or 50 pounds and, you know, you really worked the system and you really know what it takes, you might have a weight loss site in there somewhere, especially if you've got a different take on it. You can't do the same old stuff. Everybody else has done. It won't matter. It won't be interesting. It'll be boring. Nobody will care. You have to find something different and unique, and there is infinite territory there that's unexplored. I know nobody believes me, but it's true.
I agree that, because it's so often people get, they get caught up on what everybody else is doing and don't take the steps that you're talking about and look within themselves, look within their past. When I'm writing sales copy and even when I'm working with a client, I'll ask them, you know, to give me a picture of their ideal client. And literally we go to, you know, name him or her. You know, what do they do for a living? What type of job do they have? How much money do they make? How many kids do they have? You know, literally get, you know, it's an old trick, you know, and literally get, you know, and name them all the way down. And I know there's some big brands that are doing that now. It's, you know, and I forget which store it was. One of the big department stores did that. It, you know, and they would say, would Beth like that? Would Beth wear this or whatever her name was? And everybody would go, yes. Then it would go in the store. If she wouldn't wear it, it wouldn't go in the store.
Mm-hmm. It is also important to know what keeps your client up at night. You know, what is it that is their sort of silent grief or their upset or their anxiety? You know, what if they, because here's the thing, if we know what's keeping them up at night, it means nobody else is solving the problem. Life coaches, it turns out life coaches, what's keeping them up at night is they don't know what business they're in. They can't pick a niche. And so now I get inundated with life coaches because it turns out they really, really, really need this work. And it's consistent for me because I really feel like a mission to help people who are sort of helping professionals, who really help other people. And when I can create a powerful brand with somebody who's a life coach who's making things happen for other people, I feel like I've really been successful. I've really done exactly what's consistent with my life purpose, you know? So there's like this whole like purpose thing, and not to be like, you know, woo-woo or, you know, new age about it or anything like that, but we do need to know sort of what we're here to do, right, in some basic way. Because we don't want to be in the crochet business if our heart is really in the NFL, you know?
Right.
It just isn't going to work. You've got to have some passion for what you do.
Yeah. Well, especially if you want to be successful at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can all be 50% at something we aren't that passionate about. I mean, if we just want to go collect a paycheck, we can do it at 50%. But if we want to become really successful at something, and we all define success different, then we need to be passionate about it.
Yep.
We flat have to be, you know, I am passionate about helping other people build their businesses, whether I'm involved as a partner. I'm passionate about building businesses, whether it's mine or other people's. I mean, that's what I'm passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, other people are more passionate about putting money in their own pockets or, what, you know, it's all about your passion, what you love to do.
Yeah, it really is. And part of that is because you need that passion energy to work as hard as you have to work. Because it doesn't really feel like work. It just feels like fun. I mean, when I sit down with my laptop in a place that actually has a good connection and a cell phone connection that works, which in Burlington, Vermont can be difficult, when you get both those pieces going and I've got my latte and I'm in my comfy seat, man, I am the happiest person in the world. You know, I can communicate with anybody. I've got people listening to me. I've got things to tell them. I'm discovering new input all the time. In fact, after I hang up, I'm going to go blog, you know, euphorically for several hours and catch up all the blogging I've been meaning to do for the last week.
That's awesome. That is awesome. That's, and you'll be right there on the side of the lake working on stuff.
Well, pretty much. Well, that's my goal.
Yeah. Well, that is the thing that we, that is the thing that, that's why a lot of people don't understand people like us. You know, people that work work 9 to 5 don't understand us. It's like, you're working on a Sunday? I'm like, well, I got this project. I've got a lot of fish, you know. They don't understand that. But for us,
the joy
it's
of
like,
completion,
it's what,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's what we, you know, it's what we enjoy doing. You know, it's, you know, we have fun building businesses and writing in our blog and communicating with our online friends and clients, and we
yeah.
enjoy that, and that's probably a key to success.
Yep.
So we've asked ourselves, we've asked ourselves the questions about, you know, defining our ideal market, understanding who we are, and who we want to be talking to, and a little bit about, we've talked a little bit about the message we want to be delivering. What else, what other pieces should we add to that?
The brand is important, right? And the brand is nothing more than just the set of words that is used to convey what this is all about. However, one mistake people make when they come up with these great ideas is they come up with a brand that's tricky or catchy instead of a brand that's simple and benefit-oriented. Got to have a benefit-rich brand. You know, get known now. doesn't get much simpler than that. It's not super catchy, you know, but what it says is we'll get known now. Not tomorrow, but now, you know, or not, you know, 3 years from now. This is your opportunity to really get known. So the you know, a similar brand would be the one I mentioned earlier, Escape from Cubicle Nation. That's a
yeah.
really powerful implied brand. Implied benefit. You're going to get the heck out
yeah.
of Dodge, and you're going to go reinvent your whole life. Another brand, I've got one I love that one of my clients did called the Six Figure Moms Club. And that's a club where women who earn six figures and have little small children meet and have, like, you know, effective business building mommy time, you know? I think that's a great idea. And their kids,
awesome.
I don't know if their kids, yeah, no, it's great. It's for moms who are powerful entrepreneurs but don't
yeah.
want to be sitting in gymboree with all the moms who quit work. They want to sit,
right.
you know, sit in a mommy environment with other women who do what they do. And that's
yeah.
just smart, you know? And that,
yes,
and by
is.
The way, that
yes.
woman, Angie Swartz, who developed that, figured that out because that's what she wanted. I mean, often the craving is about satisfying your own craving and figuring out there's a whole bunch of people who want what you want.
Well, especially with our, especially online.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, especially with the, you know, you there, you know, if you think something's cool, there are another 100 people online that think that are interested in the exact same thing, and it doesn't matter what it is. You know,
no, it
really doesn't. There is somebody out there that. I lost
Go
you
ahead.
There for a second.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. It's. I think that. You were just saying, what, it just has to be profitable, or it just has to be.
It just has to be specific, so people can find what you're looking for. My cousin in Nebraska is the world's leading manufacturer of replacement tubes for bubble jukeboxes. And it's actually a viable business. Isn't that extraordinary? There are people like all over the world who want these tubes for bubble jukeboxes, which are, you know, from the 40s or 50s. It's a vintage item. And nobody makes the bubble tubes, but this guy does. I think that's really extraordinary.
That is extraordinary. You know, every being here in Montana, being a small population state like it is, you'll find pockets, you'll find people in small towns, and I'm sure Vermont is similar, where that have done things like that, where they become the expert or the supplier of X, and
yeah.
nobody else in the world, or whatever, in lots of little things, and it's I love running into those people.
Yeah,
know?
Well, right in my town of 600 people, for years we had a guy who was a Stradivarius restorer. The only violins he repaired were Stradivarius.
Mm-hmm.
He'd get, you know, the $40,000 violin would appear at his door, and he'd work on like 5 a year. Isn't that amazing?
Wow. That
yeah.
is amazing. Well, here in Billings, we had a guy who would recondition double reed instruments, bassoons, oboes, and and he'd recondition them. And I mean, there aren't 50 people in the United States. Probably aren't 10 people in the United States doing that.
Yeah, that's. And you're reminding me of another guy in the town of Wadhams next door, which has 350 people. And there's a fellow there who is an expert at restoring the navigational instruments of vintage airplanes, like warplanes from World War II and the Korean War, et cetera. And he would be given the instruments out of planes that were taken from crash sites. You know, there was apparently some planes that were frozen in the Antarctic, and they unearthed these planes and extracted these instruments and sent them to this guy. That's how well known he is for this, by the way. I mean, it's a collector's world when you're talking at that level. And you go into his workshop, and there'd just be like weird little stuff in little piles all over this huge sort of airplane hangar that he worked out of. Really interesting. I mean, everything with its own little sets of screws and, you know, little piles everywhere. Anyway, back to building your brand online. We've really digressed. Yes. That was sort of a rabbit warren or something. That wasn't just a rabbit hole. That was like a whole rabbit community or something we just went into there.
Yes, we did.
I'd say, you know, once you get the brand and what I call the USP or unique selling proposition, that's just a little phrase that really explains what's different about you. For instance, my brand is Get Known Now, but my unique difference is insider strategies that make you a household name. And the insider strategy part, of course, is this whole, you know, coming up with unique craving, the hook, et cetera. So what I want to say about the USP is it needs to fit with the brand comfortably and be something that can go on the header as well as the brand. So the brand and the USP fit together on the header of the blog, and a blog goes up. And the blog is maintained regularly. The owner of the blog is a chatty and generous person who shares a whole lot of useful material with people at all times. We really are in the permission marketing mode eternally with this. You're posting viral videos. You're posting updates of conferences you're going to. You're talking about interesting links you just found. You're sharing a cool free report. It's got to be useful. I was just reading a Twitter feed from Chris Brogan today, who is a great social media expert. And Chris has like 12,000 followers and maybe 12,000 Twitter feeds he follows, which is pretty wild. That means he's constantly being bombarded with them, which he likens to walking down 38th Street in Manhattan and being able to read minds.
I read that same post.
Did you read that?
Late last night.
And it was about high volume twittering. And this whole concept, like the reason I'm on this guy's list is because he's cranking out useful URLs every 15 seconds. And he's the master of providing useful content. And his lists are four times bigger than anybody else's because everybody wants useful stuff. And he's just doing it faster at a higher volume than anybody else. And every once in a while, he probably sells something of his own, but he also gets invited to be a speaker, a commenter, a guest blogger, like constantly, because he's such a generator of interesting stuff. So the degree to which you crank up your output is the degree to which you'll crank up the input as well, of people approaching you and wanting your services. And you know, like every day now I'm just trying to put out useful stuff to people, whether it's through Twitter, blog post, podcast, whatever. I mean, I'm about to really revive the podcast because I'm seeing that's got to happen too. It's one of the channels that has to be out there.
More and more people are listening to podcasts on the way to work
or
at lunch times. I mean, more and more people are doing that. Even, you know, when they're not in front of their computer, they're doing that. They're downloading their podcasts and listening to them while they're taking their train ride.
Right.
So that's, so podcasting is an area that is growing. It is growing. Let's see. We have about 5 minutes remaining, which is a lot of time, actually. but I always like to let people know when we're getting closer.
Okay.
I really like, unique selling proposition that's something that so many people don't understand.
I can talk about that forever. You know, I'll tell you, I used to work for Ted Bates, which is the ad agency that created the unique selling proposition. Rosser Reeves, who was the copy editor there for years, coined the USP. And I'll give you a really beautiful example of a USP. I worked in the Palmolive dishwashing liquid account, and the USP for that account famously was softens hands while you do dishes. Now, the truth of the matter was it was the water that softened your hands, not the soap, which was, in fact, terrible for your hands. But nobody else was saying it, and the FCC wasn't exactly controlling, you know, the impact of dish liquid on skin. So it was each man for himself, right? So, comes Madge, the manicurist, and the You're Soaking in It campaign, and the USP at the end softens your hands while you're doing dishes. The reason that was a unique selling proposition is because all the other dishwashing liquids were focused on how it made the dishes look. Nobody thought about what the dishwashing experience felt like for the end user. So Palmolive, like, quickly became the dominant dishwashing liquid by focusing on something totally different from everybody else, and not only saying it's okay for your skin, saying it's good for your skin, which, of course, it wasn't. But, you know, hey, truth in advertising is not always possible. I think it's really a beautiful example of taking a look at the market, figuring out where you fit in, and then figuring out where you can own the market. That's what the whole Blue Ocean Strategy piece is. Blue Ocean Strategy is looking at what everybody else in your market is doing and then doing your thing totally differently, i.e. the development of the iPod. You know, what we had in the market at the time the iPod came out was little compact disc players that didn't really work, because when you went running, they would go boom, 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 and the disc would stop playing. Or little radios, and if you didn't like what was on the radio, too bad. So in comes the iPod and turns everything on its ear. Or Southwest Air. You know, you've got all these airlines that have boring flight attendants, scheduled, you know, flying in and out of expensive airports, assigned seating and bad food. So they threw all of that out, and they came up with a winning formula that made them the top carrier in North America for, like, I don't know, the last 10 years or something. Huge, really dominant position.
That's great. You're right. In a lot of cases, it's breaking through the industry norms and standard. You know, the old story of, you know, watch what everybody else is doing and do the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times is what you want to do. Not always, but quite often that is what you want to do.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Go ahead.
Go on.
I was going to say, that's kind of what Mike Michalowicz is doing with his toilet paper entrepreneur. Most of the startup advisors out there are these, you know, Ivy League types that, you know, haven't really done a lot of startup stuff, or a lot of the business advisors out there are like that. Whereas he's this insane guy who does crazy, crazy videos, but that's his brand.
You know, he sort of reminds me of Hello, My Name is Scott. Do you know this guy? Hello, My Name is Scott, you can find him. He's a fellow who always wears a name tag that says, Hello, My Name is Scott, wherever he goes. And then he blogs about the experience of always being out there. And he's developed this type of marketing around, like, he calls it introduction marketing or something like that, to the point where his lungs collapsed and he went in the hospital. And I hope I have the story right. But he had to get rid of his name tag, so he had to be in a dressing gown. And he felt so, like, naked without his name tag that after he got out, he had Hello, My Name is Scott name tag tattooed on his chest in case that ever happened.
Oh, my God.
I mean, his whole thing was about making friends and developing your marketing one person at a time as you go out and put yourself out there and introduce yourself to the world. That's a really interesting idea. I mean, just using the simple Hello, My Name is name tag, that's different. You know, and not everybody has to be that different, or, you know, really wacky with the video. It's like the toilet paper entrepreneur, you know. But I think these guys are tapping into something fundamental, which is they're tapping into what's quirky and interesting to them about life, and they're going to own it and share it.
Right, and that's what draws, like you're saying earlier, that's what draws people to them. That's what makes the connection. Yeah. Even if that isn't you, you appreciate that they're them.
Yeah.
You know.
And you don't have to always be sort of in people's face. I'm not saying it's about your, you know, public consciousness.
Right.
But it is about your ability to communicate what's interesting about you. And usually that's passion driven, you know?
Yes, it's.
I've never met a boring passion, you know? Like, who's.
Right.
I suppose somebody could be passionate about, like, drain cleaners, but pretty unlikely, you know?
No, and if somebody's passionate about it, they pull you along. I mean, I've had friends, you know, female friends of mine tell me about their crocheting that they're all excited about, you know, and it kind of pulls you in. You're like, well, that is really pretty, you know. I mean, it won't pull you in for 3 days, I mean.
People don't get excited about stuff that doesn't have some level of challenge or unusualness or hope or, you know, sort of spiritual buzz or whatever. Passion is born of these really good qualities, you know, creativity, ingenuity. I mean, look at the passion drummed up for Barack Obama. You know, Barack Obama was a different kind of candidate, and people just can't get enough of him in an era where we're starved for something different, because we've had an 8-year administration, no matter what you think of it, they've been the same for 8 years with very little changing about the way they govern the country. Of the same philosophy consistently for 8 years. And you know, there's kind of this look-alike, sound-alike problem in Washington where most of these candidates can't distinguish themselves because they're all sort of these, you know, big old white guys with gray hair, you know? And in comes this spectacular, different candidate who's really stands apart and gets a 2.5-to-1 vote, you know, win.
Yeah, and they did a great job of handling that brand and the social marketing messaging. There were so many things that were done right from a marketing perspective on his campaign. It was amazing.
Yeah, even the door-to-door. He did the Hello, My Name is Scott thing. I mean, the door-to-door canvassing for that candidate in the swing states was apparently never had been done before to that degree, not even close. With people going, saying, hi, we know you're voting for President Obama. We just want to make sure you've got a ride. Can you imagine someone coming to your door and saying that? That's extraordinary.
Yes,
like, I'm not even somebody you have to convince. I just want to help you, you know? And they had, like, one of my friends did this. She actually got trained to go to New Hampshire and knock on doors and offer to drive people to the polls.
Wow.
I know. And they'd go up and down. There'd be two people who worked every block, one on one side of the street, one on the other side of the street. And then they'd line up all the people who wanted to go, get a ride, and they'd take them all at once. So they get all the people on one street, do one trip, come back, get all the people on the next street, you know? I mean, that's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they did that. That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
That is...
someone who did that.
That's great. Well, do you get Talk Biz News, Paul Myers?
I do know his stuff. I haven't read it lately. No.
Well, he did a really interesting breakdown of you know why as marketers we needed to pay attention to the campaigns. You know, just because he's like, you know, these are some of the best marketing minds in the world are doing this.
Yep.
So it was really interesting. He's like, you know, he goes and he talked about how everybody. He goes, I had everybody saying I was voting one direction or the other direction, and, you know, for the same reasons. He is just laughing. He's like, I'm not telling you who I'm voting for. But he's like, look at the marketing campaigns and all the lessons that were learned there. Very, very fascinating. From a marketer's perspective, very fascinating to watch. Well, we're at the end of our call, and we're actually a couple minutes over, but it is still recording, I found out. And I found out when I had one of the calls where I said, we're done recording right now, you know, and found out that it kept recording. Is there any last words that you'd like to let us know about, Susanna?
Yeah, just drop on my website, which is getknownnow.com, or my blog, getknownnowblog.com. And if anybody wants to follow me on Twitter, I put up a lot of useful stuff, and my Twitter feed is the at sign Suzanne, capital S and small U-Z-A-N-N-E, capital F like Frank, capital B like boy.
Great. That'll be great. And I think I'll be following you here before the day is out. So I really appreciate it. It was a blast having you on the call, and I'll be taking a look at your stuff here down the line too, and I've got a little bit of time to focus on something different. I enjoyed the call, and I need to focus my brand a little bit too. So.
Okay, Doug. Thanks so much. Take care,
thank you
everybody.
Very much.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.